Hello and welcome to Holden Village. Today is Thursday, August 22nd, 2002. Today's session is From Generation to Generation, presented by Margie Fiedler. The session number is FIM2002-02. Let's listen in.
I'm Margie Fiedler,
okay. And
I serve as assistant to the bishop, and I primarily work in the area of helping our institutions. Holden is one of the institutions in our synod, and all the congregations, and then individuals within the synod on estate planning. And I also represent the ELCA Foundation. And so it's fun to come here because sometimes people that want to meet with someone about their estate plan later, but they don't want to do it at their time at Holden, I've been able to connect them with whoever back in Minnesota or back out east or whatever. So it's been really, really fun, and it's a joy to be a part of this. We call this session From Generation to Generation. As you heard, you know, Holden is in the middle of starting a capital campaign, and with the whole idea of encouraging people. A lot of people we talk to say, you know, I can't give anything right now. People like Mary, you did a wonderful gift, can't give much, but I'd like to do something later on or when I die. And we are counting all of those kinds of gifts as part of the campaign appeal. And I know when I used to see these sessions, I thought you had to be old and rich and no children in order to give something to the church. And it's been so fun in meeting with people from estates of 100,000 to estates of 100 million. People, every one of us can give something if we desire to, even if it's 1% or 2% of what God has entrusted to us during this life in our estate plan. And again, people like Mary who choose to do something during life, that's just wonderful. And a lot of the gifts that I work with people that they give during life actually help them more financially now too, and yet knowing eventually it's going to go to Holden and their congregation or whoever they want it to do. So I represent all the ministries, and it's fun because it's as I visit with people, it's hearing their faith story and, you know, hear about maybe how Holden has been important to them and other ministries that have touched their lives and how they want to honor those and give thanks and praise to God for those ministries in their planning. So please ask me, as Mary did, any questions you have, and I will just share a few things with you as we go along here, and I won't talk a lot, and we'll have time to have lots of discussions at the end. I like to begin thinking about the whole area of stewardship and giving. As some person said, and being a steward is a journey from the water and word of baptism to the moment of death. And those are Lutheran, all of you Lutheran? Those are right from the Lutheran Book of Worship, you know, from the baptismal service when God calls us and claims us to the moment of death. And I love that baptism, you know, where after you're baptized, you're called as a child of God, let your light so shine before others that they may see your good works. And that's how, you know, what we can do as baptized children of God in giving glory to God and thanks to God for all that has been trusted in our care. And then at the moment of our death, when they say those words, receive him or her into the arms of your mercy, into the blessed rest assurance of everlasting peace. As someone explained to me once, you know, what we do during that time, from the time God calls us in baptism to the moment we die, is how we live out our faithful stewardship to the glory of God. And when we go on at that moment of death, when we go on to greater glory, there's only three places where we can leave what we have collected, what God has entrusted to us. And I bet you can figure out the one that gets left out if you don't do any planning. Charity, or the church, or Holden, or
and
where.
And who gets the most, because people, a lot of people don't even think about it, is the government.
Exactly. And what's amazing is that in doing planning, and with hundreds of people every year, we often end up by doing planning. And that's, for me, being a steward too, taking that time to do it. And is we often end up leaving more to family by doing planning and to the church. And the only one that gets left out, of course, is Uncle Sam. But nothing wrong with wherever you want to give, but there are some ideas that thankfully we can use that can help places like Holden Village that we care about. Again, if I were to meet with you, or if one of my colleagues around the country were to meet with you, we would go over lots of things, and we usually do a complete analysis of a state analysis, where your gifts are, what you have that we call our own, and how it's titled, how can we do lots of things. And again, as I said, if we don't do anything, of course, it's easy to procrastinate. You probably, I don't know where you are at, if your plans are in place, but why do you think 7 of 10 people in this country die without a will or a living trust? It's still 7 of 10 adults. So if you don't have a plan, you're in the majority.
I think it's because people don't think they're going to die, or they just, I'll do it tomorrow, or I'll do it when I think I have everything in order. Mm-hmm. I did it after a divorce.
A lot of people will call me at that point, boy, I better do something.
Yeah. Yeah. And I did that instead of getting life insurance. I decided mm-hmm. that was the way I wanted my money to go. You see, I've sold my house and sold my car, and everything kind of is in the stock market right now, so it needs to do a little better than it's doing now for me to come home permanently. But but I just decided it was better. And then I want to give more to charity, because it goes straight to charity. The taxes don't take it.
Right.
And I'd rather have things go where they do the most good. So that's why I did what I did.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's wonderful, though.
And my bank gave me a name of a good lawyer to do that with.
Oh,
so
good.
Washington Mutual was very helpful.
Now, did you say you're giving stock now during life and then also at death, or
no,
just at death?
At death, or when
okay.
I sell.
Okay.
But when I sell it.
Okay.
Some of it at death.
That's great. That's wonderful.
And
have
I
you
also
told
have
Holden this?
Not, no. That's why I
okay.
gave this thing, because I didn't need. I know that I need to do more than what I just. I just signed that all over last Wednesday.
Oh, that is so great. That's great. Well, you've hit on a lot of them. Any other ideas about why people don't make a will, or some of you may have a living trust? Busy, too little, too expensive. I hear that a lot from people with small estates. You know, it's too expensive. Why would I spend money doing a will when there's not going to be enough to bury me? I did this at a seminar once, and a lawyer said, yeah, don't do anything. He said, we make a lot more money when people don't do anything. And he got some people interested. He didn't want the business, but he was like, you know.
How is a living trust different from a will?
A living trust is different from a will. Some people call them living trusts. Hey, you said the last one, don't plan to die, see? A trust is, these are the very, very basics of a trust. It's completely private, where a will is, you know, anyone can go down and see what your will is after you die. And probate is public. It avoids probate. It says on their medical care, you can also do that in your will, plan for medical care. It can manage assets. You could be the trustee during your life, and you can set up a trustee, like a bank trust, to manage your affairs later. It's more expensive than a will to set up. Washington and Idaho are two of the lowest states in the country for probate. So it's not so much an issue here, but like in California, where a probate is a percentage of your estate. It used to be that way in Washington, and I run into a lot of people that think probate is going to be real expensive. It's not in the state. The only time I ever recommend a living trust is if you own property in several states. Then you would have to probate in every state. I just met with a couple. They lived in Spokane, had a lake cabin in Coeur d'Alene, and they were inheriting a farm in Minnesota that they wanted to keep in the family. To pass that on to their children, probate in three states would get very expensive. And I said, you need to talk to an attorney about a living trust, and gave them the tools to do that. So that's the basics. What confuses people a lot is that they think if they have a living trust or a revocable trust, they don't need a will. You still need, and if attorney, sometimes they miss this, is what's called a pour-over will, which pours over everything into the trust that you forgot to deed to the trust. And I just had a couple who had a living trust down in southern Idaho, and she inherited property, and they didn't get it into the trust, and she died, and the guy called me, and he said, we're having to go through probate, and I thought that's what we avoided, but it wasn't titled to the trust. So you got to be real careful when they're set up. I am very cautious, and there's been a lot of misuse of this. There's a lawsuit in Idaho right now where these companies try to sell living trusts, especially to elderly people, and they're not needed, and but it's the upfront money that they get, you know, $2,000, $3,000, $4,000 to do it, and the same will might have cost them $200,000 to $300,000 to $400,000. So be careful. Don't go to an attorney if you're ever thinking of a living trust and not not one of the companies. I just was with a couple, and they had this beautiful bound book in Chihuahua. And they said, the guy said, if we don't sign it today, the price is going to go up. And I said, you don't need it, you know. So it's kind of one of those tricky things. Again, why to have a will or a living trust? To nominate an executor, you want to nominate someone. We recommend an alternate to. And one attorney, I was meeting with a couple with their attorney, and they said, well, what happens if we don't name one? And he says, well, the court will appoint it, and it's often the child that gets there first or the nephew. And this couple went, oh, no, we don't want our oldest son to be the executor. So it helps you, and it protects the state. It's, again, to nominate a guardian. This is, I do a lot of things with young couples, and they say, we don't have anything, or we're just out of college, it's all bills. And I'll say, now, is this a gift that God has given to you as this little two-year-old walks in? And they forget that. In my 6 years of doing this, I've had two calls where, tragically, young couples were killed in accidents, and in one case, the judge split the kids, put them in foster care because the family was all arguing about who should be the guardian. And, you know, it's just sad. So if you know of people like that, young people who don't think they need a will, they have children, really encourage them to get a will, mainly to name who they would want to raise their children, to remember persons who would not otherwise benefit. Again, the state of Washington has a will for you. You're still a resident of Washington, and if you don't have a will, they know exactly who it's going to go to.
Like all my cookies are going to my best friend who thinks I'm a great cook.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, my husband's in my will, we have everything going to each other, but we even have our pets to one niece and ski equipment, you know, and all these things. But one attorney, I was doing this, and he was telling a story about a woman in his church who, she had a small estate, I mean, about $200,000, and she had told him at church that she wanted to help the neighbors next door who always mowed her grass and things, and she said, I don't have any family, and I want to help PLU, and she had her congregation and, you know, holding and a number of things, and he knew it, and she never got into his office, and she was in her 80s and died. And he said, I knew all that stuff she told me, I could not do anything about it. You have to advertise. There are people that are called error finders. It's their job to research. This error finder found cousins 7th removed in Sweden, and those cousins got $100,000, and the error finder got $100,000. Again, nothing wrong with that. I'm sure the cousins were very happy, but the fact that she didn't get to remember the charity she wanted or the neighbors, so and he couldn't do anything about it. So. And then, of course, to remember your favorite charity or charities. One thing that, if you're interested at all in reviewing your will, I've got these will books. It's for wills or trusts. It asks all the questions, and it's for updating or doing it. And you take this to an attorney, and they then help you with it. And I go over this with hundreds of attorneys who say, boy, it saves a lot of time. One of the things, if you would ever consider gifting to charities in your will, one of the things that the church offers at no cost that I think is just great is that, say you say, well, we are going to give, one couple I met with, they said, we're going to tithe our estate. We're going to give 10%, 90% to our kids and 10% to several charities. And the wife said, how can we do that? We have four kids. And he looked at her and he said, you know, if they can't make it on 90%, I don't think 100% is going to make that much difference. And they ended up doing it, but they were concerned about what charities to give it to. So what we did is in their will it says, and it's in this little booklet, 10% to the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America for the Mary Arneson Distribution Agreement. Then Mary fills this out and lists, she can list 10 different charities, 10% to Holden, 10% to her, you know, whatever. Then this is kept in Chicago, so when the executor's job just is to divide up the estate, that amount, or if it's stock or whatever, goes to the church. They get that amount, so it's easier for the executor. They pull this out, and then the church mails all these checks out. So you don't have to have all of the, if you have more than one charity, it's a great way to do it. The other thing is, say you say, oh, I wish we would have put Lutheran Social Services in, and we forgot them. Well, you don't have to go back and pay the money to have your will changed. You just call the church and you update this.
Okay.
So it's really, 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 it's really slick. And it, we have
I
20,
wish you had one.
We have
one.
Yes. Oh, dear. I think I have another. I might have to make that copy of that here.
That's okay. We can get
but,
another.
Yeah, copy. And it explains it kind of in the back here, too.
Yeah, that's okay. Thank you.
But and it shows 25% there. But in my will, we have or my distribution agreement, we have six. I always say six different ministries. And my husband snuck in the University of Idaho, and I said it makes me so mad. But it was really important to him.
Well,
and the church will distribute. It doesn't have to go to all Lutheran things. So we have it going to Holden and the Synod at our church and. Lots of different things. I don't think they're going to get any of them are going to get too much, but things that have been important to us. And then and the University of Idaho will get some too. If you list Holden Village in your estate or anything Lutheran, and you put it in your will or living trust, if you send this to our office, the attorney has to send it in. They'll give $50 off of the bill. This was a request that we received. If people name anything in the Synod, which would be Holden, would be included in that.
Even though I'm in Southwest Washington,
yes.
Northwest Washington.
It doesn't matter because you couldn't name just ministries in that Synod. But if you named Holden,
yeah.
Then you give this to the attorney and they will send it in. And we received a bequest to encourage people to put ministries in their will. And one guy said, and he said, tell people, don't tell the attorney you have this because they might just add $50. He said, give it to them at the end after you get the bill. And it's really fun because I have no idea what it is, but I get these from all over Washington and Idaho, and they'll say, you know, Mr. and Mrs. Jones have named Holden Village in their will, and then we send the check to the attorney's office. So, and then this is another little booklet. It's called For Notes for My Friends and Family. And this is things that you would just fill out and leave with your other documents that would help an executor, your desires and wishes and all those kinds of things. So.
Oh, this is good.
Yeah, that's
because I have a funeral plan already paid for too. I've done all that.
Oh, you are on top of this, Mary. My goodness, that's great.
Well, like I said, after the divorce, it was kind of like, you know, I'm taking care of myself now. So,
good for you. Good for you. The other thing, I'll just give you a copy of this too, and it's also in that wills booklet. But I think they're a little different in here. is sometimes we forget the greatest gift I believe God has given us, and that's the gift of our faith. And we encourage you to consider writing kind of a mission statement or faith statement or Christian preamble to your will. So when some family or whoever sat down to read your will, mm-hmm. it'd be kind of your own faith statement. Now, I said, like, my husband and I, we have exactly the same will, but we both wrote our own Christian preamble and kind of what our faith means to us. So someday when our children read that will, they'll see, you know, what was important to us again, maybe remind them about that being our greatest gift. And again, if you're interested in giving something in your will or your trust, some people tie their estate. Some people divide their estate by their number of the children, with the church being your ministry child. And that's what my husband and I did. We have two children, and so we have everything going to them until a certain age, and then we have it divided by three in our church. And we talk about our church being our ministry child, and that church child is divided up into six different ministries. And we did that through that distribution form. So it's just something again to think about. I don't think there's anything in the Bible ever mentioned of St. Peter and the pearly gates, but we sure have a lot of jokes about it, right? For new arrival, just because you can't take it with you is no excuse to leave it such a mess. And I always think again of our lives as stewards. The more that we can do to leave things in order for our family or whoever, our executor, whoever will care for our estate, it's again one of those stewardship kinds of things. So back on this little green outline, all of this, you know, Christian estate plans can turn tax dollars into church dollars, leave heirs an inheritance that's a blessing, and give a thank offering to the Lord. I mentioned the will and living trust and the bequest and distribution Christian preamble. And the other thing that a lot of people have is life insurance policies. And some people have, they want to just gift something from their life insurance policy. And it's real easy. This is another easy thing to do. You call your insurance agent. You say, I want to give 10% or whatever to Holden Village in my life insurance policy. And they send you a change form, beneficiary change form. And some gift a fully paid up policy. I just met with a woman and she had a policy, a $500 policy that she bought in 1923. She's paying $1.18 a month for it. And she got it when she was a new mother. And she just gifted it to the church. Well, the value when it was cashed in was over $12,000.
Are you kidding?
Mm-mm. And she gifted it, so she got the tax advantage mm-hmm. for it. So she gifted the policy. So that's why. And then some people take out a new policy and list the church as the owner and then list several beneficiaries. And that's a tax reason, because if you buy a policy and you write the check to the ELCA, they get your check for the Mary Arneson insurance policy, goes to whatever insurance company. They write the check to the insurance company. You get a tax deduction for giving a gift to the church. They just happen to own a policy on your life. And then when you die, it goes to the ministries you've left. And I have brochures on all of these things. There's insurance brochures here. Any of you are interested in any of these things, you can sure help yourself to any of this. Then on that list, I want to mention what we call life income agreements. There are a lot of people who say, boy, I want to make a gift, and I think there's some tax advantages to doing something now during life, but I really need income. And here's a situation here where this is happening more and more, especially with the market we're in. CDs are maturing and people have been getting 3-5%. I just was with a lady who was getting 6%, but it was going to be reduced as it was going to renew now at 3%. And she didn't want to do that, and so she wanted more income and asked me how we could do that. What we did with her is we took that CD. And in her case, she was...
Why don't you just give it to her?
Okay. You've got that busy knitting going on.
Yes.
It's beautiful. If you open up the middle, in her case, she was older. She was 88. But look at what we could pay her on a charitable gift annuity, 11.4%. So she
had to be at least 62.
No, you don't have to be. It shows, we do them as young as 35,
okay.
But it's at 5%. So it, so now, see before, even in today's market, that's not too bad.
I know.
You know, it's not too bad, but it was, they just don't list them. It does say in here we'll do them as young as up to 35, or as young as 35.
Who is the carrier of this?
This is done through the ELCA. And they, it's a minimum of $1,000.
Yes.
And believe it or not, there are still some people with appreciated stock. And I just did a gift with a couple who had GE stock that the total amounts of $200,000, they had paid $18,000 for it. And so by gifting it, they avoid a large part of those capital gains taxes.
Oh.
Plus, when they receive the income, they can receive it as gains income at 20% rather than their tax bracket, which was 31%. So it's a wonderful way to make a gift and increase income. Here it says, fixed payments for life, and if it's a couple or a mother-daughter or whatever, it's only can be on two people. It goes for both lives, so when one person dies, the other person continues to get it. Rates up to 12%, you get an income tax deduction, and then part of those payments back to you are tax-free. So
the more money you put in, the more money you get out?
It depends on if the more potential you would get. It depends on how long you live.
Uh-huh.
If you did a gift annuity, can I ask how old you are, Mary?
54.
54. If you did a gift annuity today of, say, $10,000 a stock, and you might live to be 100, you would get a heck of a lot of money out of it.
Mm-hmm.
If you died yesterday, you don't get any of it in your estate. Your kids don't get it or whatever, it goes to the church or to Holden or whatever. Here's an example of a couple who are 83. Mr. or Mrs., I guess I did. Yeah. And they had, I changed their names. It's really not their names, but it's an actual case. They had the property value of $10,000. It was stock. It had cost them $4,000. So they had a gain of $6,000. They get fixed payments, they get an income tax deduction, and they also, not completely, but avoid some of the gain on the $4,000. They get 9.7% for the rest of their life, so $970. They can live to be 100, and they're still going to get that. It doesn't change. It doesn't go up as they age. And then after they die, the remainder goes to charity. It's usually around the value. We've been paying about, the average has been 98% for a long time. It has dropped now in the market and with people living longer. The charity right now, the average is 92% of the gift. So if this person followed the average, Holden would get, $9,200. After the payments had been made. Now, say Mary says, well, I'd like to do that, but I don't need the money right now. She can do what's called a deferred payment gift annuity. Or anybody. I have 70-year-olds that defer their payments to later. Because you make a gift now, you get immediate tax deduction, but then you, in this case, they took the gift out now, but they're not going to start making payments for 10 years. So they're going to get the payments for starting in 2012, and look what that goes up to them. I mean, because it's been deferred, they get a larger payment, and then again, eventually it will go to charity. So that's a different piece. That's a deferred, where you defer the payments out.
Most of the annuities this day and age run from 3-4 up to 7%. But through the church or whoever manages this, they're able to get more out of this.
Yeah, but you don't.
But you don't have the option of retrieving
back
the money.
Exactly.
That's right. I mean, you.
It's a gift.
Do it through a gift.
It's just like putting
so
it in
like
the
a trust.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
These are different than a trust in that it's a. Well, I guess a trust can be a fixed payment too, but it's a.
But it tells me that somebody is able to put this money to use to get that kind of.
It's pooled all together.
Yes.
So if you did a $10,000 gift annuity and I did a $10,000,
yes,
with all this money pooled together,
that's right.
Obviously, my dad is 95, well, he's getting 12%. He gets mad, he thinks it's discrimination because it doesn't go above 90 years old, you know? But he thinks I should be able to change it, you know, since I work for the church. But they're obviously not making probably 12%, even though he's getting 12% on his $10,000. But with my money and, you know, everybody else who's made these gifts, it's all pooled together. And so they're able to do it.
So it works kind of like an insurance company, but the money goes back into the pool.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
That's great.
Yeah. The people will ask me, well, is this government backed? Is this guaranteed? And I said it's by the full faith in God, because it's backed. It has to be backed by the assets of the ELCA. The Lutheran Church has been doing gift annuities since the 1800s, and they pride themselves, and they have never missed on a payment. Even during the Depression, when people were having trouble with the banking system, they always were able to make their annuity payment.
Yeah.
Never have they missed.
But how does this differ from, for instance, the Lutheran Brotherhood or the Native Association?
Yeah, how Dustin
does
this.
Oh, you sweetheart. Thank you. Or is it the screen?
No, it's over there. I can see Dustin.
She's
thing.
A teacher. You can tell. What do you teach?
You took the one that was in storage. That's why it was Dustin.
Yeah,
yeah,
well,
I did. She had one sitting over here.
Housemate, I know, but the housemate should be dusting that too.
Oh.
It's okay.
You're so sweet.
No,
thank you.
Crazy.
I'm sorry, Otto. What was
I mentioned. How does this differ from the Lutheran Brotherhood or Lutheran Aid Association or any of those, which I'm not too familiar with?
I know that they cannot do gift annuities. You have to be a charity.
Okay.
But that's why Lutheran Brotherhood started their own foundation, which is Lutheran Community Foundation.
Yes.
And they do gift annuities.
Yes.
So you can do it through that, but you could also do it through University of Washington, or you know, different anything that has a charitable aspect can do it. What I like about the ELCAs is it's a minimum of 1,000. With Lutheran Community Foundation through the Lutheran Brotherhood, it's a minimum of 10,000. So I can get more people doing even smaller ones, and people who say, "I never thought I could make a gift like even that." You know, young people
so,
doing $1,000 gift annuities.
Yeah. So in our case, man. Case,
how old are you?
72.
Mary.
No, wait a minute. What?
I'm 74.
72. Forget it. Two or two. What I was going to say is, it's a judgment case to us. Will we need that pool of money, or
yes,
can we get by on the, shall we say, the cast off?
Exactly.
That's
exactly.
Where
you could do one right now, and you would get on just your life 7.7.
Yes.
If you did a 2 life and you're around the same ages, you'd probably get 6.9. If you're a lot younger.
Oh, we'd be going 7.3. If we have minutes, right behind you.
Oh, okay.
By a little bit.
Exactly.
Good. Thank you.
And you know what, Otto, a lot of people that will do this is they're afraid, well, I might need it. And
yes.
So they'll do a $1,000 one. And then they'll call me up 6 months later and do another $1,000 one. And then I had one man who had $10,000 CDs from you, so he did a $10,000. You can't add to them. When the church sends you a check, they'll pull it together. But
each was a separate.
Because he was worried about how much he would need, and he finally, kept doing. We have one woman. She's not someone I've worked with, but she's over 100, and she has over 100 gift annuities. She'd do, I think I'll do this one and give it to this charity eventually, and then I'll do another one. So Pastor Hallberg, who directs the foundation, he always says, I tell people, he said, I swear if they do a gift annuity, it adds 10 years to their life because these people, we keep paying them out. especially in today's market, we're doing an awful, awful lot of these. And it's a way again to make a gift. And a lot of people maybe who have their will and they have everything going to their kids and they don't want to change it but still want to make a gift to their church or Holden or whatever. This is a great way to do it by still receiving income. So, questions on that?
No, something new though. Boy. Okay.
Okay. Then on the next on that list says, after deferred gift annuity, it says college option gift annuity. That's another one that people take out often on grandchildren.
That's what my mother did.
Yeah, okay. And so it works the same way as a deferred gift annuity, but you do it on a child, and you tell the age you want the child to start receiving the payments. And often I would have people do them. They wanted it like 18 when their children were going to go to college. And one couple just said, no, we want to do it when they're looking for a job when they get out of college. And they said it at 22. And I thought, and right now my niece, who graduated in May from WSU, is looking for a job, and they're borrowing money from their folks.
She could really use it.
She could have used it, and then eventually it still goes to charity, which is just kind of a win-win-win situation all around. Then it's listed there, and Otto, this is what you were talking about. It says charitable remainder trusts during life, and then charitable remainder trusts at death. That is this little brochure, and a trust is a more complicated piece to set up. It's a separate document. The church does these for people. We do these for people, and we actually pay the trust documents. Now, this is a minimum of a $100,000 gift, where a gift annuity is a $1,000 gift, because a gift annuity takes a piece of paper about this length to do when people either transfer stock or write a check. A trust has to be drawn up by an attorney, and we do pay the attorneys to do it. But I do most of these with appreciated property. A gift annuity cannot accept a farm or a home, but a trust can in our case. So it's often with appreciated property. I'm just going to finalize one on Sunday. A couple who had bought property that they, about 40 acres in Washington, and they always thought they were going to build a home on it. They'd go camping on it. Well, now they're in their 80s, and they said, we're not going to build a home on it. Well, they paid like $10,000 for it in 1963, and now it's $120,000. So they don't want to pay the capital gains tax on that amount of property. And a trust is 100% bypasses capital gains. Mm-hmm. So if you do, I do a lot of these with appreciated stock, you don't pay any capital gains on it. The property is donated, you get a deduction, no gains taxes. And then it goes into a trust, and the church sells whatever it is, the stock or the property, and starts paying you money for the rest of your lives. The difference in this and another difference in a gift annuity is that a lot of people want it to go on for 20 more years for their children. And so it can go on and on and on. And so it does cost more to administer, and that's why it's a minimum of a $100,000 gift. I did one of these recently with a rental property that this woman had bought as an investment, and she was renting it to college students, and she just got sick of kind of managing it. And she called me and she said, you know, I'm getting more money per month since I did this charitable trust, and I don't have college students calling me at midnight saying the roof is leaking or the furnace is going out, or, you know, so it's a wonderful way to give. Some will do it, well, like I said, we'll send it on, to have it on. Here's a situation of a couple at 60 and 65, and they had $200,000, and they decide what they want. They did 6%. And they're having to go for both of their lives. So when one of them dies, the other one will get it. And then they decided for 12 years, they just wanted it to pay out to their children and nieces for 12 years. Now, this is an opportunity for growth. This is an average, and we figure over the years the church has been doing these trusts, if they're paying 6%, our average is 8%. Obviously, right now in today's market, they're not making that amount. But that's an average. Well, look at the growth, that if it grows at 2%, how much would go to their charities. So it's a way of maximizing and giving more to charity later on. Often, again, people do what's called a testamentary trust, and that's described in the same brochure, where they don't want to give it up during life, but we write up the trust documents so that a certain portion of the property goes into the trust when they die. And this is a couple who had an estate of $1.2 million. They gave a lot of it to their children right away, but they put $200,000. This happened to be what was in their IRA. And they decided to just have that pay out to their children. So the children are going to get this amount over 20 years, but see what they're doing then for Holden and for charity over time. So you can split it up however you want to, but they still get an estate tax deduction on what the remainder value of what would go to the charities would be. So there's lots and lots of ways to set this up, and this is often done with IRAs or pension plans. Of course, everyone's talking about right now how much their pension plans have reduced, but historically, the pension plans, a couple of years ago, 90% of 90-year-olds were dying with 90% of their pension in place. Mm-hmm. And because they were afraid to take, they had to take out the minimum, and they didn't want to take out more, because what if you need that for nursing home care or whatever? Mm-hmm. So what was happening is they were leaving it to children, and based on all the taxes, we saw people leave it to children, and because of the children's tax bracket, children were getting 10 and 15 cents on the dollar of what was left to them, because this is what's called income in respect of decedent. Well, someone's going to pay those taxes, and whoever you leave it to is going to pay the taxes, unless you leave it to Holden or a charity. There is no taxes when it's left to a charity. And so when we talk about good and better assets to leave, so if I do an estate plan with someone and they have an IRA and they have, you know, whatever in their IRA, we do it through beneficiary form and leave that to the charity, because it bypasses income tax, estate taxes, you can leave all or part of it, and it's just changing the beneficiary form.
I've already done that, but I probably need a number to do it too.
You need a what account? You said
I already took my Roth account.
Right.
And when I die, it goes to Holden.
Okay. And see, Roth is different. That's wonderful you did it. But mm-hmm. a Roth would not, because Roth is you've already paid the taxes.
Right.
That's different.
Okay,
so your kids would not be paying taxes on it. Well, my husband and I, we have a small Roth account, and that one we have going to kids, because there's no taxes on it anyway. We've paid the taxes. But the other pension going to...
So what about my teacher's retirement, which I'm going to start getting next year, even though I'm still working?
Is it Washington State? Okay. Is it a TF CREF?
It's a Tiers 1.
Tiers 1. Okay.
You can set that up at retirement. You can set that up at retirement.
How you want?
No, so I start getting. Well, I'm waiting for the form to come. It starts being given to me starting next
August. Even though you're not really retired?
Yeah, because I'm 55 years old.
Oh, you're no. already. Have
Are
you
already
annuitizing
made it? It then?
Or, no. What?
Have you already made up the papers?
No, I haven't.
Oh, okay.
But I have to start taking it right away, or I can take the whole thing out and put it in something else.
Right.
But I'm not going to put it in anything else because it gets better interest with the state than it does right now. And
find out when you get the paperwork. Most of the time, there's a certain amount of payout. If say you start getting it and you only live 3 years, then you can gift it to someone. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's a 10-year, 15-year. You may know more about the actual pension plan, but it's a beneficiary form.
Okay.
And you could put it right on that. You ask them when you set it
okay,
up.
Okay, I do that.
Get the form. So, but that's a great asset to give. And
so what happens when you don't have any children of your own?
You don't have children, so yeah. Well, you know. Then it says
Because they're getting so much from everybody else, you don't need any money from me.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you think of, in your case, benefiting what you love. It's that compassion, and it's great. Let's see. After qualified retirement plans, it says donor advised funds. This is a sometimes I have people who say they want to do something, kind of their own family endowment, and it's a $10,000 gift. It can be added to, and then each year, whoever sets it up, like if you set this up, then you decide, okay, this year I want the earnings to go to Holden, and next year I want it to go to the food bank, and next year I want it to go to World Hunger or whatever. So you decide each year how to do it. And I have people do these to kind of teach children about giving, and that's kind of a fun thing to do. And then the last thing on there says, on the pooled income fund, that's kind of a cousin to the mutual fund. It's kind of any size gift can go into this pooled account, and you receive income from it. I do most of these with someone has a property of $10,000, a little piece of lot somewhere, and they want to gift it, but it's not big enough to put in a trust. We can take little pieces of property into this. I did a house that was a couple had inherited it, and they didn't want it, and it was worth $50,000. So they gave the house, but they're getting income. They're only in their 30s, and their aunt gave it to them. But they're getting income from it, but they also want it to go to charities. So it's just one of those.
So what does the church do? Did you sell the house then, and then
Mm-hmm. My job was to go down, and it was in Troy, Idaho, and I called the church there and said, "Do you have a realtor?" And he recommended a realtor. If it was your house, then the realtor works with you and says, "Mary, it was appraised at 50. We've got an offer for 42, and you say, "Uh-uh." You still get to decide. Mm-hmm. You say, "No, I want the income from 50,000, not from 42,000." The only problem with that is if you donated something, you have to have it appraised. So you might have paid $500-$600 to get that house appraised, and then if it doesn't sell for 3 years, the government can say, "We want a reappraisal," and that's your cost again. I've never had that happen. So you don't have to worry about that. So then that Roman numeral 4 says, be a part of the heritage circle. And that's what Holden has in terms of asking people to like you, Mary,
Chris,
who said, "I have made a gift in my estate plan." That's how they are listing people.
Okay, these are very good friends too. What a riot. I know everybody in these pictures.
Are you kidding? Art almost.
Art
oh,
and Laura,
they're so great. But anyone who makes a gift in their estate plan, and it can be $5 or $500,000. It doesn't matter. We want to list those people as a part of the heritage circle. Or if you're making a campaign gift, say you decide to do a gift annuity, and you say, "I'm going to do $10,000. Well, you'd be part of the Heritage Circle, but we would also, during this time of the campaign, if you wanted it eventually to go to the Holden Endowment, then you would be, it would count towards a campaign goal, because the endowment's goal is to raise 1.5 through plan gifts that they won't receive for a while, hopefully. But it's a way to say this is how eventually how much money will be in the endowment fund. So,
do you have anything to do with the endowment fund as such? I mean. Are you familiar with?
I'm only familiar a little bit with it.
Every other endowment fund also is going down because of where the money's sitting.
In the right investments
now, right now, yes.
Yeah.
How is the Holton endowment fund or whatever?
I do not know how it's doing, but. If it's set up, and I think it is, like with the ELCA, we do a lot of endowments for churches and institutions and everything. And yes, those on paper have dropped. And it's like you see them going like this and this and this. But we don't sell those shares, so we keep with the faith that eventually if they come back up. And I tell people, I get calls from churches, oh, it's like we lost 20,000. Well, you can look at it like that, but in the long run, it's in perpetuity kind of thing. And, you know, we hope and pray it'll come back up.
So it's a question of, shall we say, managing or making sure that only the interest is utilized and the endowment stays. Is that not the idea? Or is there a clause like 5% of the
total return
could be used?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Often the ELCA encourages congregations to do what that total return concept, and they recommend 5%. Okay. And they say over the long run, yes, you're in fact dipping into principal this year when it's not even making 1%. But over time, they found that will keep up with inflation and be able to continue to make distributions. And the reason is, say a church is, or take hold, say they're using that to whatever, help pay for faculty, or church is sponsoring a missionary, and you're not earning anything this year, you say, sorry, missionary, we can't help you, you know, serve this year. So the total return gives them a consistent distribution over time. So that's what the church encourages. Obviously the congregation can, or the institution can do whatever they want. That's what our synod has done. So we keep giving distributions even though, because we want to help the seminarians and.
Sure. So
thoughts or questions or
very good.
Things? I was like, remember Far Side, you like that? I think they said, if you don't believe anything I said, it's just, it's George, he's taking it with him. So I said, you know, maybe that's how it really is.
I think the piano.